You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome to the Football Digest podcast. I'm your host, Conor Bromley, and I'm joined today by Ned Keating. And there's only one place for us to start. It's been a crazy weekend of Premier League football, but I think the Manchester Derby on Sunday afternoon is the only place for us to begin this discussion. But I'll start with a simple one for you, Ned, this morning. Was it a fair result?
I think in the end of it, all things considered, yes. in a one-word answer. You look at the stats from it, and I think, you know, the big standout one is the fact that Man City had more shots than Manchester United had the percentage of possession. I think Manchester City had 27 shots and Manchester United only had 26% possession. Now, of course, that's not to say that, you know, a rear guard defensive display is anything to be, you know, looked at disparagingly and, you know, oh, because you don't have as much of the ball, you don't deserve to win the game. That's not what I'm saying at all. But in terms of teams that showed attack and intent, I think we saw more from Manchester City than we did Man United. Now, again, I'm not suggesting that Man United should have gone out all gung-ho because, you know, that probably would have left them a lot more exposed and we wouldn't be talking about a 3-1 defeat. We'd probably be talking about a 7-0 defeat instead. But I think on the balance of play and all things considered, Manchester City were the better side throughout. Better players as well. You know, Marcus Rashford and Phil Foden both scoring fantastic goals, but Phil Foden had a great game for Manchester City, and arguably Marcus Rashford didn't have a great afternoon for Man United, that goal aside. You know, I saw someone, one of our colleagues at the Daily Star, Nick Murphy, posting on X yesterday about it, on Sunday about it, saying that Marcus Rashford is, you know, scoring an all-time Manchester derby great goal and delivering an all-time stinking Manchester derby performance is something akin to football heritage, I think is what Nick said, and I think he's right there. But again, that probably sums it up. A great moment of brilliance for Man United to be in the lead, to hold that lead to half-time, but actually, all told, Phil Foden's performance, Manchester City's performance was more deserving of the 3 points, and yes, in short, it was a fair result, I believe.
Do you think Manchester United come out with any credit from the result? Because I think there was a lot of talk. I mean, on our Thursday show, Andy Dunn sort of suggested that it could be a slaughtering for them in the game. But they came out, they were structured. I don't think Erik ten Hag can be blamed in the way that they were set up, because I think Manchester United set up in the correct way. They had a game plan, and I think they largely executed that game plan, but were undone essentially because Man City have, you know, top-tier world-class players and Manchester United probably don't.
Yeah, that sums it up. I think you look at the benches as well and who could Manchester City bring on to change the game and who Man United could. And it kind of highlighted the job that Dan Ashworth, when he eventually takes over as sporting director or in that kind of structure at Man United, kind of a job similar to that, even if it's not going to be that exact job title. The job that he's got on his hands to rebuild that Manchester United squad. Because, you know, even in that starting 11, Scott McTominay would not walk into that Manchester City. He wouldn't even get on the Manchester City bench, I think. You know, he's a good squad player for Manchester United, or he should be at least where Manchester United want to try and build. But he shouldn't be starting derbies. You shouldn't be looking at, you know, him and expecting him to be, you know, kind of one of your leading lights in a derby. And likewise, you know, having to bring on Sofyan Amrabat off the bench as well. I mean, he's had an appalling season at Man United. I think he's just not really worked out for him at all. And it's a shame because we saw a great player at the World Cup and we thought, you know, Man United might have been where Casemiro is kind of moving towards the kind of latter stages of his career. Sofyan Amrabat might have been the replacement for him, but I think he's probably likely to head back to Fiorentina come the summer. But again, it's there. It's you know, who comes off the bench. For Man City, you know, Jeremy Doku's not having a great game. Who can they bring on? They go and bring on World Cup winner Julian Alvarez instead. You know, and Alvarez has been phenomenal for City, especially in Erling Haaland's absence at times this season. And it's there. It highlights it, you know, as you said there, that was the difference in the end the quality of players? It probably was, and it probably told. But again, it highlights that job that Dan Ashworth, when he eventually starts work at Man United, should he start work at Man United, and he probably will, the work that he's got to do in, you know, it's not necessarily even just the first team that he's got to worry about. It's that bench as well, and who kind of comes on to be the replacements, to be your game changers when you need them. And Man City, I'm not saying that turned the tide in their favour, but it definitely helps when you've got a World Cup winner to bring off the bench to replace someone who maybe didn't have the best games in Doku.
And this isn't going to be the first time we're going to talk about refereeing decisions today. But Ten Hag kind of, I would say, clutching at straws a little bit, talking about a foul in the build-up to, I think it was City's first goal, where Rashford was kind of played in. And Kyle Walker, I would say, stepped across him and won the ball fairly. But, you know, there's I suppose, at least a discussion that there was possibly a foul in there. But do you think Ten Hag's clutching at straws a little bit mentioned that? Because it didn't, to me, look like a clear-cut foul.
I was watching Kyle Walker's post-match interview on Sky Sports, and I think he done very well to show great restraint and not say that, when asked about this incident himself, that Marcus Rashford needs to get on the weights a little bit more, because that's all it was. Did Rashford play for it? Perhaps, you know, kind of, we've seen fouls like that given, we have, and it's frustrating. You know, even Erik ten Hag, I think, acknowledged in his post-match comments with Sky that it would have been soft had it been given, and yet he's arms flailing, screaming at the officials, saying that it should have been given, and still kind of suggest that, oh yes, it was soft, but it should have been a foul. And it's like, but if it was soft, it probably shouldn't have been a foul then. No, I don't think there's anything in it. I don't think he's got much of a, you know, even himself, I think by admitting it's soft, knows that he hasn't got much of an argument there. And yeah, 100% clutching at straws in that situation. You know, Kyle Walker defended it well. I think, you know, Marcus Rashford knew what he was doing. He felt contact. And, you know, like I said, we've seen that time and time again in the Premier League, that things like that are given. But in this instance, I think the referee was right not to give a foul for it. And ultimately it led to Manchester City's equaliser.
Do you think the pressure is maybe ramping up a little bit on Erik ten Hag now? Because, you know, even in his post-match, he'd said that the gap to Man City isn't that big. And I don't think anybody was watching that game. And we said at the start of the show that essentially Man United played well and executed their game plan probably as well as they could have, and yet fell pretty short. And on a different day, Man City probably could have scored more goals. I mean, we see the Erling Haaland miss from 1 yard out, where he heads it over the bar, or kicks it over the bar. I can't remember now, but he missed from 1 yard out. To me, that just seemed like a nonsensical statement that the gap isn't that big, because I think it's plain for all to see. I mean, look at the Premier League table. The gap between Manchester United and Man City is massive.
I'd say more his reaction to that Manchester City equaliser would show that he's under pressure than perhaps his comments. I think his comments are, you know, maybe he is trying to G the players up and say, look, you know, we're brave and we're plucky and we only came away with a 3-1 defeat today. And yeah, in history, you know, you kind of look back and go, oh, it was only 3-1. But actually, you know, we know that, as you said there was every chance that on another day Manchester City rack up maybe 5 or 6 goals instead. And it looks a hell of a lot different. And we're talking about a hell of a lot of different things this morning instead. I think more so, you know, that kind of, we've never seen Erik ten Hag that animated before on the touchline. And yet he's, you know, for a foul that he later then admittedly knowingly acknowledges himself that was, you know, even he said it was soft, for him to be that animated over it, I think suggests more that the pressure is getting to him, that he's feeling under pressure. You know, a 1-0 win for United at Manchester City would have eased any pressure on him for probably between now and the end of the season, I would say, that he would have had a strong chance then to, you know, kind of ridden this storm. We'll come back to it in the summer. We can build again. There's something there to hang on to. And I think he was more upset that they were no longer in the lead. I think, you know, even you know, anything would have happened at that point. I think his anger wasn't probably actually directed towards the foul. The anger was probably more directed towards the fact that they conceded, which again speaks of a man under pressure. And the form now as well, to lose to Fulham last weekend, to need a late winner to beat Forest in the Cup in midweek, and to lose to Manchester City. You know, a couple of weeks back on the show, we were talking about, oh yeah, Man United, they're the favourites to go out and finish in the top four. And now we're thinking they're going to face a bit of a struggle here. You know, it's been the same process with United throughout this season. One step forward, two, maybe three or four steps backwards. Consistently inconsistent is a term that I've used to sum up Manchester United before. And I think that pressure is starting to grow on Erik ten Hag. And we saw that more in his reaction to Manchester City's equaliser than perhaps in his comments in the press conference. You know, with that, I think we have to remember that English isn't his first language. Maybe sometimes, you know, it can get lost a little bit in translation. So we'll give him a little bit of a free pass there. But definitely his reaction to that equaliser suggested a man under pressure.
Got to talk about Phil Foden, the star of the show again in the Manchester tour. It's becoming his game, isn't it? You know, he's thriving. So one, how good was his performance? But two, you know, Pep said that he was the best player in the Premier League right now. Do you think he's possibly the shout right now to be the player of the year come the end of the season? And if not, who do you think has a better chance?
Well, he's doing well, isn't he? He's already surpassed his great season last year. I think he's best in the Premier League previously last year, wasn't it? And he's already surpassed that. And we've still got 2 months of the campaign left to go. So he is having a phenomenal season. He's enjoying more, you know, do we say it's more of a free role, I think, for Manchester City, where he's kind of, you know, he's definitely playing more, he's played more centrally at times this year as well. And kind of yesterday popped up on the right, popped up on the left, you know, was here, there and everywhere for them. You know, I was speaking to a colleague last summer, who was suggesting, you know, Phil Foden, we talk about him as this generational talent, but what's he done? Where's he kicked onto? Is this the season now where we're starting to see him finally develop into that world-class player that we all knew he was there? But, you know, the kind of, I think my colleague's gripe with him at the time was he wasn't winning matches by himself. He did that in the derby yesterday, and he's done that in a couple of derbies before. So I think we're definitely seeing development in him. For sure, a candidate for player of the season. I think other players as well, you have to look at, you know, Declan Rice has been great, I think, for Arsenal since he's gone in there, you know, kind of really performed well. You know, other candidates as well that you might put forward for it were, unfortunately, you know, kind of hamstrung a little bit by injuries. You know, James Maddison, had he continued that form that he showed at the start of his Tottenham career, had he not been out for 2 or 3 months, I'm sure we'd be having a conversation about James Maddison as well. You know, Kevin De Bruyne is always a regular in the conversation, even if he has been out so long and for much of the season. You know, I'm sure we'll still maybe talking about him come the end of the campaign. But yeah, I think definitely I'll agree with Phil Foden being in the running. But of course, you know, there's still 2 months to go in a campaign. You know, it'd feel weird to give it to Phil Foden almost in a way if Liverpool were to go and win the title or Arsenal were to go and win the title. So I think there's definitely still a long way to go, not just in the title race, but in the race to be you know, Premier League player of the season. And there's definitely plenty of good candidates on there. And the good thing ahead of a Euro race this summer is that I'm talking about Phil Foden, I'm talking about Declan Rice as two players that could be considered leading lights for us. I'm sure Gareth Southgate would be delighted to see two of his key men for England in the running for that as well.
Let's switch, though, now to Liverpool's controversial win at Nottingham Forest, I think it's fair to say. I suppose we may as well just start with the goal itself. The referee's had a nightmare, hasn't he, in the build-up of that. It should be Nottingham Forest's ball. It was a head injury. Canate went, I think, and got clashed by Kelleher, didn't he, in the box. Referee stopped the game, as he should. That was correct, because it was a head injury. But then to give Liverpool the ball back just seemed puzzling to me. Yeah, referee had a nightmare, didn't he, Ned?
He did, but how long was there between the goal and that incident? Forest had enough opportunities, I think, to clear their lines at that point. You know, you understand the frustrations, but much as Erik ten Hag was clutching at straws saying that that was soft, Forest had enough time between that and, you know, to didn't clear their lines from the corner. Darwin Nunez was given the freedom of the box to head home. So, yeah, I feel like, you know, you can be upset as all you want, but we're talking about phases of play here, and that, you know, there was such a long gap between that goal. And, you know, there's other things as well. There's countless other things. You know, we can draw back Max Verstappen winning the world title in 2021 to when Nicholas Latifi was born, because Latifi crashed and that eventually led to the safety car, which allowed Max Verstappen to overtake Lewis Hamilton, because that seems to be in the same time frame as this as well, as this gripe that Nottingham Forest fans are having over this. You know, how far back do you want to draw it? You know, we could go back in other games as well where instances have been missed and then 5 minutes later, I know it wasn't 5 minutes, I'm being very facetious here, but you know what I mean? Like, I still think that they had enough. There was a long time between it and they still had enough opportunities to clear the line before that goal eventually went in. Yes, I can understand the frustration. Yes, the referee got it wrong, but they still had plenty of opportunities, I think, to prevent that goal from going in. And they didn't, you know, like I said, you know, they didn't clear their lines effectively from that corner. Of course, that corner, yes, it doesn't happen if the referee does his job properly, but, you know, get on with it, do your jobs yourselves. And Forest didn't do their jobs. They didn't clear that line, their lines properly from that corner. And they gave Darwin Nunez the freedom of the box to head home from 6 yards. You know, yes, the referee got it wrong, but equally Forest didn't do their jobs as well. So if you're moaning the referee not doing their jobs, I think the Forest players need to look at themselves as well.
Interesting. It's an interesting perspective. See, I would just look at it as the referee doesn't do his job, and that leads to, like, if Forest get the ball on the wing with Callum Hudson-Odoi, they might even score, mightn't they, from the cross. But we'll talk about Jurgen Klopp. You know, he didn't see much wrong with it after the game. He referenced an incident that happened in the first half where the same decision was made. But I feel like if the shoe was on the other foot and Liverpool had lost a game in the 99th minute, 1 minute after the additional time as well, added into that. But if Liverpool lost a game in the 99th minute and that had happened, he would not have been of the same opinion, I think it's fair to say.
And neither would I if it happened to Tottenham, but it didn't. So, you know, it's almost like you're almost like building up a straw man there, I think. You know, of course, he'd be annoyed and angry, and so would Mikel Arteta, and so would Pep Guardiola, and so would Erik ten Hag. Every manager would be if the rules aren't followed properly. So I don't know what you'd expect there. You know, he has to be... Yeah, it would happen with every manager. I don't know what you'd... I'm slightly confused as to why you're surprised by that, if I'm honest. I can't understand why, you know, anyone would be in that situation. You know, yes, I'm saying that the Forest players now should have done their jobs better, but had it been Tottenham, oh yeah, I'd be livid. Of course it would. But that's football, you know. We're all hypocrites. We all know that. So yeah, Liverpool were beneficiaries, shall we say, in this instance of it. And they'll be happy with it. But of course, yeah, as you say, that, you know, you'd fully expect Klopp, you'd fully expect Guardiola if it was Man City, or Arteta or any other manager to be disappointed if that happened and led to them. But again, likewise, like I said, you know, we can moan at the referee not doing his job. And yes, there was an incident in the first half. You know, imagine that, getting it wrong twice in the same game. So clearly it shows that Paul Tierney doesn't have a clear understanding of the rules and maybe has to go back to referee school or whatever it is that they do for that. But, you know, in that regard, you know, every manager is going to be annoyed, angry and upset if it happens against them. Of course they are. But still go back to my point that Forest had enough time to clear the lines, enough opportunities to clear the lines, and they didn't do it. So if they're going to moan at the ref for not doing their job, they need to look at themselves as well.
Surely, though, that's every referee. So if a free kick gets given that isn't a free kick and it gets crossed in and somebody heads it in, you could use the argument of, well, you should have just done your job and headed it out the box. Like, I don't think it's necessarily... I understand what you're saying, and I get that Nottingham Forest had ample time to defend that situation, but I can very much understand from their perspective. And I also think from a neutral perspective, I don't have a don't care about this. I'm not a Forest fan or a Liverpool fan. I feel as a neutral that Nottingham Forest were robbed at the weekend, having played so hard for 99 minutes. And then to have seen a decision like that, which was so clearly wrong. Yes, they could have defended better in the next phase of play. But I think they've got a very reasonable gripe and fume with it, and I don't think that you can just say they should have defended it. You know, I think that it's beyond that because of how bad the decision was.
But it was a decision that was made in a different postcode. It was that far up the other end of the pitch. You know, the incident is that let's drill it actually back here. Should Kevin Kelleher have kicked the ball back rather than playing a Liverpool counter-attack? Should Kevin Kelleher have kicked it back to Nottingham Forest to start again? Okay, maybe there's instances there that he didn't play well, but everything else, the ball happened. The incident happened all the way on the Liverpool goal line and they still couldn't sort it. It happened all the way up the other end of the pitch and they still couldn't sort it. Sorry, no. I think they switched off And I think they thought the job was done. But one thing we will say as well is that the scenes at full time should never be repeated. And the fact that the chairman came down as well onto the pitch, as angry as you are, it's not a good look, Mr. Marinakis. And as angry and as upset as they were, and again, you know, I'm not saying that I don't understand their disappointment and frustration, but there's ways and means of voicing it. And I don't think the chairman confronting the referee on the pitch at full time was the best idea, as voicing your frustrations at that. But, you know, the only instance where you can kind of go, has the referee got it wrong? You should have done your jobs instead. Is, you know, if it scored a worldie or, you know, a handball was missed years ago. I still think you've got to be switched on. And I just still don't get why they were unable to clear the lines effectively and why they, and again, you know, Darwin Nunez being given the freedom of the box. I know I've said that more times than anything else this morning. But that's two things, and they're two very simple things as well. You can, you know, moan all you want, but it's the basics, you know. Like sometimes you'll get beaten by a striker running down the wing with pace and he'll knock it past you, and there's not really much you can do that because that's a you know, physical and, you know, are you quick enough, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, closing down Alexis McAllister could have done better on that. That's basic. And marking the striker in the box in the 99th minute is a basic as well. And they didn't seem to do either of those.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to mention the owner coming on and confronting the referee, apparently confronting him in the tunnel. To be fair, I would suspect that that'll lead to some sort of punishment because I think that that is an area, an owner should not be in that area after a game. I think that's wrong. But luckily, they've got Mark Clattenburg in there, haven't they? So he can tell them this morning if the decision was correct. They've got him there. But we'll switch to talking about Liverpool. I mean, we've talked a lot about that incident, but it's a huge win, isn't it, for them? With their injury list, they've had four games where, you know, Klopp said it was impossible, I think, after the game that Liverpool could win these four games. Now, I think he's been a bit dramatic there, but that was his view on it. And that's him galvanising that Liverpool team, isn't it? And showing that group mentality that they've got in this title race of, you know, even when the odds are against them, they can come out and find a 99th minute goal and win a massive game away from home and keep themselves at the top of the Premier League.
Look, with this injury run, they could have easily won 3-0 at Forest. But that impact wouldn't have the same as this 99-minute winner, as you said there. The you know, the togetherness that it will bring, the belief that it will give them as well, that doesn't matter what happens, doesn't matter what's against us, we'll go on and get a win, we'll find a way, we'll do it. It's that belief that we'll get more from, you know, a comfortable routine 3-0 win over Forest if they'd done that instead. For Liverpool, I think they're clinging on and they're just holding on until they get to that international break at the end of the month, where they've got kind of 2 weeks then to hopefully not lose anyone else to any further injuries whilst on international duty. But also, again, you know, 2 weeks without Premier League games, 2 weeks for certain players to maybe get back towards a bit more fitness and a bit more sharpness as well. So, yeah, clinging on isn't the right term, but they are holding on, you know. I mean, I think even at this stage, and I know that they'd love to win every competition, but obviously they've got a huge game coming up this weekend against Manchester City. And I think if they get through that, they'll be happy. And if they lose in the FA Cup to Man United, they'll be upset, but they won't be disappointed. Well, actually, no, they probably still will be disappointed. But the point is that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, if the, you know, because as well, it's the return to the Europa League for them as well. This is going to be like a hellish run between now and that FA Cup game against Man United. And if that's the thing that ends up falling by the wayside, I think so be it for Liverpool at this stage. It might be that kind of mindset because they are so stretched. You know, ordinarily up against Sparta Prague and, you know, with the games around it as well, playing Sparta Prague in the Europa League, then Man City in the league, Sparta Prague again, and then up against Man United in the FA Cup quarterfinals. Ordinarily, I think Liverpool would look to try and rotate that squad for the Europa League games, but they can't really rotate because they've got no one left. There is no rotation available to them, I think, you know. So in that respect, you know, clinging on in the sense that they just need to get through to this international break, still be in the title race, you know, a point at City this weekend. Let's not get too greedy or anything else. You know, take that point, be happy with it against City this weekend, and then just move on, you know. And if Europa League happens in the FA Cup, whatever, grand, okay, just still make sure that you're in that title hunt, and they still will be, obviously, by the time they get to it. But it's that big game, I think, in this little four-game run that's going to come up between now and the international window that they'll be focusing on. But that result against Forest will give them a lot of confidence going into this run as well, even if the squad is stretched, tired, exhausted, knackered, because they've got everyone else out injured.
The race for top four is it's hotting up quite nicely, isn't it? You know, we talked about it, I think, 2 weeks ago, where we sort of put Man United in there. And you'd probably say they're just about clinging into that top four race. But really, it's about Aston Villa and Spurs, isn't it? Both won at the weekend. Both won in, I would say, pretty dramatic fashion. Certainly Aston Villa. But even Spurs, you know, trailing 1-0, came, turned the game around, won 3-1. I don't know where this is going. I mean, you'd say Villa are definitely in the driver's seat, but do you think Spurs have got enough in them to catch them up?
Well, again, for Villa, they've got the awkward thing of Thursday, Sunday's about to restart again for them in the Europa League, Europa Conference League, sorry. Grand scheme of things, I wouldn't be entirely surprised. You know, Unai Emery's got a fantastic record in European competitions, but I wouldn't be entirely surprised if Aston Villa, because of the prize, the reward, if it was the Europa League, might be a little bit different, because Villa might see that they have an opportunity to go far, win the Europa League, get into the Champions League that way. But they're in the Europa Conference League, and what does the Europa Conference League get you? It gets you a slot in the Europa League, which they're going to probably end up with in all eventuality in the Premier League anyway. So you, in that respect, you know, kind of almost, from what the grand prize will be, you kind of almost draw it away and you kind of go, all right, we'll focus on the Premier League. But they've still got that, you know, that nagging doubt. And there's every chance that they can win the Europa Conference League. That's it as well. We're not looking at it, you know, say, you know, greatest respects to Brighton or West Ham, but there are bigger teams in the Europa League. And if Aston Villa were in the Europa League, you look at some other sides in there, you know, Liverpool, AC Milan, for example, and you kind of think they might have a tougher time. They could still go on and win it, and we could still be sat here in a couple of months talking about a Brighton West Ham final and me having, you know, egg on my face. But the point is that there's you know, more historical sides with stories of great European success in that competition. But in the Europa Conference League, Aston Villa are, you know, among the favourites, if not the favourites for it. So then it's like, but it would be great to win a European trophy, great to win a trophy. Do we want to miss out on that opportunity? So it's that kind of, that hard balance. And Spurs don't have that. Man United don't have that to an extent. Man United, of course, are still in the FA Cup as well, but it's easier to juggle the FA Cup than it is to juggle a European run where you're playing Thursday, Sunday, and it's only in the FA Cup for Man United. It'll only just be a few games moving about here and there. And Spurs as well, very little to focus on outside of the Premier League. Could that come back and haunt Villa? Is that something? Is that squad big enough to sustain a title, not a title challenge, but a top four challenge and the Europa Conference League push at this stage in the season? And, you know, I think we know when push comes to shove, if they have to prioritise one over the other, it would probably be the Premier League over the Europa Conference League. But that is a disadvantage to them potentially, that they have to worry about that competition, whereas the two rivals for them, Man United and Tottenham, only have to worry about domestic matters between now and the end of the campaign.
I mean, I think you as a Tottenham fan, it must be very difficult, because it looks like Spurs will get fifth, and we know that there could be a potential fifth place Champions League spot. It's a bit like Sophie's Choice, isn't it? You know, in the sense that if Spurs finish fifth, you need to then cheer on Arsenal to do well in the Champions League, but you definitely don't want Arsenal to do well in the Champions League. I mean, that's going to be very, very difficult and very interesting. It actually reminds me of when Redknapp was at Spurs, and I think Chelsea won the Champions League, which knocked them out, kind of the opposite kind of way of that. But what do you make of that? I mean, are you that more bothered about what Spurs would want, or do you think that, you know, you wouldn't want to see Arsenal reach a Champions League final?
Trying to make me cry on a recording by reminding me of that horrible, horrible night in 2012 when I was sat in the student union bar watching that celebrated worldie when Bayern Munich scored the opener and then in tears, thanks to Didier Drogba, not once but twice, I think, wasn't it? So thanks, Didier. There, everyone says that he's a great Premier League player. For me, that night, as a Spurs fan, at least kind of, you know, knocks him down a few pegs in the list of Premier League players. Not biased at all. But there's us, as, you know, there's Tottenham fans that have a weird situation where we could end up almost cheering on Arsenal to win the Champions League, knowing that Arsenal winning the Champions League could get us in the Champions League. And likewise for Manchester United as well, there could be that position for them instead, that they're cheering on Manchester City to get them into a Champions League spot instead, you know, by finishing fifth and knowing that City winning the Champions League could see them go on and get into the Champions League as well. So yeah, there's a couple of interesting subplots to this. Of course, I will be very diplomatic and say that the best way is for Manchester City to go and win the Champions League again, because I have no fear of allegiances or anything like that. As a Tottenham fan, there is no, they can win what they want. I couldn't care less. But yeah, Arsenal will be a little bit tougher to take. It'll be like the Larry David meme from Curb Your Enthusiasm, isn't it? Where he's like, for anyone listening, they won't have a clue what faces I'm pulling there. But if you know the Larry David meme, you'll understand what I'm going on about. It's a tough one. You know, it's kind of like almost like lose the battle, win the war as well, isn't it? I suppose in that respect. Come back to me in May and maybe then I'll give you an answer, because, you know, there's a lot of differentials to happen between now and then. You know, are Spurs still going to be fifth place? Could they have overtaken Aston Villa by this point come May? Are Arsenal still going to be in the Champions League, or is it, you know, all hopes resting on Manchester City? There's a lot of differentials. At the minute, I'm very, shall we say, because there's still so much that could happen, I don't know if I'm kind of fully realising the situation that might end up coming. I mean, I had this exact conversation with my dad at the weekend as well. I said, would you find it weird? He's a Liverpool fan. So, like, would you find it weird, like, almost like cheering on Everton if it ever came to it, to do you a favour and get you into European competition? And rather than, you know, give me the smart answer and say Liverpool would never be in that situation, having to depend on Everton, instead gave the more diplomatic one of, no, you should never cheer on your rivals. So, you know, maybe he might be a bit upset when, you know, come May, I'm sporting a Bukayo Saka shirt and cheering on Declan Rice if it comes to it. But like I said, I don't think I'm fully realising that could be a situation at this point. So we'll see the differentials that come and come back to me in a couple of months. Maybe come back to me ahead of the Champions League final when Spurs finish fifth and Arsenal are in it, needing a win to qualify us for the Champions League next year. And then we'll get a full flavour of it.
Well, we'll finish off here talking about Ollie Watkins. You know, he was lethal at the weekend. But do you think he has got this slot as the second striker nailed down, hitting at the Euros?
I feel sorry for Dominic Solanke in all of this, because he's having a phenomenal season as well. But in terms of what Ollie Watkins offers as well, and the way that he plays and how he links up play, I think definitely... Well, I don't know. It's a weird one, because do you want someone who's... you know, Kane 2.0 nearly, in terms of how he plays and how he links play, or do you want someone a bit different? Because when it comes to it, I suppose it comes to the point of, if you're bringing on another striker to replace Harry Kane, chances are it probably hasn't worked using Harry Kane, so do you want someone else instead? That might be the only issue with Watkins. You know, is he too similar in how he plays to Harry Kane? But is that weird one? Because then, of course, if Kane gets injured, you want someone who can slot straight in and kind of plug and play, and that would be Ollie Watkins as well. I'd have him in the squad for sure. He's doing well. He's doing brilliant. And he has done, you know, in every single Premier League season he's been in. I think he's hit double figures as well. Phenomenal effort for a bloke who didn't start out as a striker in his career, all the way down at Western Supermare. And now look at him, you know, double figures in every season in the Premier League so far. You know, a huge reason behind Aston Villa's success in the league this season. And yeah, I think, you know, I'd be surprised, even if I'm outlining reasons why he shouldn't go to the Euros and presenting the case for why he shouldn't go to the Euros, I'd be surprised if he isn't, such as been his form and how he plays as well. And I think he could be, it'll be interesting to see how Gareth Southgate uses him in Germany this summer if he does go to the tournament.
Okay, Ned, we're out of time here, but I just want to let everyone know that this time next week, it won't be me and you doing this podcast. We're going to have John Cross and Andy Dunn, two of our best football journalists there, who normally are on our Thursday show. They're going to be doing this Monday show next week, so they'll be able to run the rule over the Premier League games and analyse what will surely be a tantalising game between Liverpool and Man City next weekend. So you won't see us next Monday. You will see John Cross and Andy Dunn. But thanks, Ned, for joining me this morning. Always great fun, even when we have minor disagreements about refereeing decisions, to chat all things Premier League. And we'll, I suppose we won't catch you next Monday, but John Cross and Andy Dunn will.